Maybe you've seen signs posted around the city. They're still there in some places. No loitering. Well, it's actually unconstitutional to charge someone for loitering. State and federal anti-loitering laws were found to be unconstitutional 2 decades ago. And yet, despite numerous court orders, New York City's police officers continued to arrest people for loitering. Now the city has agreed to pay $15 million to settle a class action case involving some 22,000 people who were improperly arrested for loitering. And the city has promised to expunge the records of those who have loitering convictions. It's an unusual case, one that has a 30-year history. It offers a rare peek into the culture of the NYPD and shows how tough it can be to change the NYPD's behavior. Joining me to discuss the case is McGregor Smith, one of the lead attorneys for the plaintiffs. McGregor is the managing attorney of the group Bronx Defenders. Welcome to WNYC.
Good morning. Thanks so much for having me.
Tell me about the history of anti-loitering laws. I understand the first state law in New York against loitering was passed in 1965. Is that right?
It's actually a little bit earlier, quite a bit earlier. These laws have a long and unfortunate history in New York. They were passed in the early 20th century. The first was in 1909 to give police nearly unfettered discretion. And the record of enforcement since then pretty much proved the danger, showing a targeting of certain communities, particularly of poverty and of color, and gay men. And the first of these laws was struck down in 1983.
Why were they? What prompted that lawsuit? After all those decades, what finally prompted something in the a suit in the 80s that struck this down?
The suit in 1983, it was actually a defense of a criminal case, People v. Uplinger, and it went all the way up to the highest New York court, the Court of Appeals. And it was a challenge to the subsection of loitering that prohibited remaining in a public place for the purpose of engaging or soliciting another person to engage in oral sexual conduct, anal sexual conduct, or other sexual behavior of a deviant nature. And I think quite obviously it was used over its history to target consensual gay sex. And so in the 80s, it was challenged on that basis because the Court of Appeals had earlier held that it was unconstitutional to try to regulate that, to criminalize consensual sex between gay men. And that's what the court held, that you can't prohibit consensual sexual behavior between two adults in private, so therefore you can't prohibit asking somebody in public to do it.
Even though it is, you know, outside of the bedroom, it's a very even though it's taking place in public places like parks, street corners, there's no there can't be any law passed regulating that kind of behavior in public.
The loitering law that was challenged was about being in public for the purpose of asking somebody to engage in this activity. So it wasn't about the activity itself. And that was the main problem, that you can't prohibit people asking somebody in public to engage in a constitutionally protected activity that could be in private.
Why did the police department then continue to arrest people for loitering when these laws started to get struck down in the 80s and 90s?
You asked the burning question of this lawsuit. In 1983, after subsection 3 was struck down, even just in the next 3 years, NYPD illegally arrested more than 3,000 people under the void statute. I mean, they simply continued without pause. And we see this after the next one was struck down in 1988, and then the next one was struck down in 1993. Police continued to arrest, district attorneys continued to prosecute, and courts continued to enter convictions for innocent citizens for completely legal activity. We have thousands of police officers in nearly every precinct and command participated in these abuses, and it was a stunning failure. I think the important first point is that this has real life consequences. It's not just a management problem with NYPD. One of our clients, Paul, was subjected to a humiliating strip search because of an illegal arrest. Xavier was denied a job because of the illegal charge on his rap sheet. Eddie was arrested more than 20 times for this exact same illegal charge for completely proper activity. Thousands more spent time in jail. We see payments of nearly $500,000 in fines to the government, and thousands more had warrants that were put on their permanent criminal records. And these all were related to completely illegal arrests.
Is that why, as part of the settlement, the city has agreed to expunge the records of those convicted of loitering? The New York Times article about the case described this as an unusual request.
It was an incredibly important part of the relief for our clients. I mean, I think that one of the worst parts of these abuses is that an arrest is never just an arrest because of the way that criminal histories are bought, sold, and traded in this computerized world. As soon as you're arrested, you're put into the system, and employers and potential landlords and even neighbors can get access to it. And so one of the most important pieces of relief that we had to seek for our clients was to make sure that we cleaned up this mess as much as we could to make sure that the stigma doesn't continue to follow these clients, you know, 30 years later. Mm-hmm. And when they seek a job or public housing or any other opportunity.
I'm Amy Eddings, sitting in for Brian Lehrer, and I'm speaking with McGregor Smith. He's the managing attorney for the group Bronx Defenders and one of the lead attorneys representing eight plaintiffs in a case that New York City recently settled for $15 million, a class action case affecting some 22,000 people who were improperly arrested for loitering when those laws were deemed unconstitutional decades earlier. You point out in the case that police weren't aggressive enough in getting the message to beat officers that they couldn't arrest people anymore for, say, hanging out at the Port Authority bus terminal. Police officers carry cheat sheets of laws that have been handed down from one generation of police officer to another. How did you find this out? What are these cheat sheets? And do you know if the NYPD is now going forward making any effort to discourage their use or to at least update them?
Years into the case, we were deposing an individual police officer who had issued a recent summons, part of this continuing pattern of even violating recent court orders to stop. We asked him why he chose this particular charge, you know, why he went forward with this, and he mentioned this unofficial cheat sheet that he had and pulled it out of his pocket. And it was kind of an epiphany for us in terms of why these practices had been so persistent. He talked about how this had been given to him his rookie year, by his training officer and his colleagues, and shared widely across the NYPD. And there are dozens of different versions of these. Basically, they told a story about how they were unhappy with the usefulness of the official department guides about what to charge, for a beat officer on the street. And they all wrote their own list of statutes that they should charge people with. You know, what are a common list of things that we can, stop people for and arrest people for? And this opened up a whole new insight into NYPD mismanagement on one hand, and how something like these cheat sheets, these simple kind of handouts, contributed to violating the rights of thousands of people. And still, the NYPD, kind of in the context of this case, initially refused to purge these cheat sheets, to do a review, because it was so intensive. They'd have to talk to every single officer. And we had to go and get a court order forcing them to do this precinct by precinct, and which they did. And they found thousands of them and corrected them and made sure that the officers just had it blacked out on their sheet. And so we're pretty satisfied at this point that the NYPD recognizes the importance of this particular piece of the puzzle, and we have that built into the settlement to make sure that they do it again and they do a review of cheat sheets again if any new summons or arrest happens.
Now, we don't have the NYPD here to defend itself or to explain its behavior. My understanding from reading articles is that it has said it's working on this. this, and that, and indeed that arrests for loitering have gone down over the years. I have to say, though, you mentioned earlier that even in the case of improper arrests, judges went on to convict people for loitering, even though those statutes were considered unconstitutional. How did that happen? And wouldn't these cases have been thrown out of court?
You would imagine that the system would work that way, but unfortunately, very often the system just doesn't work. We know from our review of the records that there are well over 3,000 convictions that are on the books in the state court system that are presumptively valid because they're convictions that are entered. And that was one of the, I think, most unique parts of the settlement that we touched upon a little bit earlier, where all five district attorney's offices have agreed to cooperate with us to go to the state court system and file a motion to vacate all of those convictions and dismiss them and seal the records so that they don't hurt our clients in the years to come. And this is an incredibly unique part of this settlement, just the idea of trying to deal with these thousands of convictions that are on the book that never should have been entered in the first place.
You were quoted in the press release announcing this settlement as saying the NYPD used these void loitering laws to, quote, target people based on poverty, race, and sexual orientation. If that's so, why wasn't this lawsuit brought as a civil rights case?
Well, we raised all of those claims in the lawsuit. I mean, we certainly, have always known and have collected evidence about the extreme disproportionality based on race. Certainly the laws against loitering for the purpose of begging, are presumptively used to target people based on poverty, the homeless people who are asking for money on the street, largely. The subsection 3 statute that we were talking about before was used historically to target gay men, and so we know that's true from the historical record. So I think all of that is fairly well established in the long history of enforcement of these statutes.
So police officers cannot nudge a homeless person sleeping on a park bench and say, move along. That's unconstitutional?
Well, the sleeping on a park bench is a separate issue. This is the subsection 1 that had to do with peacefully asking people for money on the street is really about not the government not being able to outlaw people from approaching other citizens on a public sidewalk because they have the fundamental right to free speech to ask them for money. And the court in 1993, the federal court that struck it down, saw no distinction between a Salvation Army request for money and that of a needy person asking for help. So it's really about the expressive activity of communicating the need for money. It's not about sleeping on a bench.
And what makes panhandling in the city subway system different? There is a no panhandling law in effect there, correct? Or was that also found to be unconstitutional?
Correct. It was upheld in a separate challenge in the 90s, I believe. The distinction between a public sidewalk and the subway that the court drew was that in a subway, it's a special environment. It's a closed environment, and therefore the government is allowed to have more specific restrictions on free speech.
Got it. 8 people were the plaintiffs in this case, but the class includes more than 22,000. How are you getting in touch with these people so they can collect their settlement, which I understand can be as high as $5,000? Many of them are homeless, aren't they?
We believe so. It's certainly one of the biggest challenges that we have going forward. The city is cooperating fully in trying to find updated addresses for all of these clients. We know who they are because of the extensive arrest and court records on who was arrested or charged with all of these void statutes. And so the first step is to see if we can find updated addresses based on that list. And then the second step is an aggressive campaign to reach out to the more than 1,000 service providers that we know serve these communities, the homeless service agencies, the community-based organizations, other legal services providers, HIV and AIDS organizations. The government has agreed to post a notice in all of its welfare, homeless services, corrections offices, and other related offices to try to blanket the airways and get the word out as much as we can to get people to call in and file a claim.
Well, we've done our part here in WNYC. It was a pleasure talking with you. And McGregor, I'm sorry I mispronounced your name. It's Smythe instead of Smith, correct?
Yes,
Gregor Smythe. I'm sorry for mispronouncing it earlier. You are the managing director for the Bronx Defenders, a holistic public defender that provides comprehensive and integrated legal and social services to families in the Bronx. Thanks so much for joining us here on the Brian Lehrer Show and explaining this big settlement, landmark settlement. You, how convinced are you that this is it?
We do think that we have come up with a pretty comprehensive solution to this this particular and relatively intractable problem. I will say that one of the kind of exciting points in time that we're in right now is that a broad-based movement is coalescing, driven by the community damage done by policing practices like the loitering enforcement. And there's a new movement called Communities United for Police Reform that is a movement of community members from all five boroughs, legal organizations, researchers, and activists, and we'll be launching a campaign next week with events around the city, taking our message to City Hall and the communities most intensively targeted by these unfair police practices. And just to say to your listeners, please visit the campaign website at changethenypd.org to learn more about what's going to be coming in the next week.
McGregor Smythe, one of the lead attorneys for the plaintiffs who recently won a $15 million settlement for the city for 30 years of arresting people under loitering statutes that were deemed unconstitutional many years earlier. Thanks so much for joining us here on the Brian Lehrer Show.
Thank you so much.
Coming up, the 9 other tea parties that helped push the American colonies into war with Great Britain. Stay tuned.